Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and we're in depth this hour on first sentences and so much more. If I gave you a single sentence about a real-life person, could you write a compelling, plot-twisting story that did justice to that sentence? For instance, if the sentence said, "Holding the bottle of invisible ink, I told him, this is not my color," what kind of a story could you concoct? That was the mission our own thread writer Tracy Mumford and illustrator Anne Lane accepted from Revolver, a literary arts organization in Minnesota. And the result is a collection called Exceptionally Bad. Today, a conversation about new ways to inspire creative writing and a challenge for you. I want you to create a dynamite, provocative first sentence. And then my guests and I, Tracy's looking very nervous here. And then my guests and I and you will write the next sentence that follows. Okay, you've got it? No plagiarism. No, you know, I'd love to swipe. Last night I dreamt I went to Manderley again, which is one of my all-time favorite first sentences. You can't swipe from real stories
it's
and
been
real
used.
Writing. It's already been used. But I want you to call in with a fun and provocative, or go on Twitter with a fun and provocative first sentence. And then I'm going to ask the rest of you and my great guest today to write that next sentence. And then we'll talk a little bit about ways to inspire great creative writing. Okay? 651-227-6000 for those first sentences and the ones beyond. 800-242-2828 on Twitter. At Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Tracy Mumford is in the studio with us. You know her as All Things Thread. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I feel like I just saw you yesterday.
It's like we see each other a lot.
Good to have you here. Thanks for doing this. And Anitra Budd is with us. She's a writer and a visiting professor at McAllister. Mm-hmm. Boy, we've given you kind of a little challenge here for your first time on the show, and I love that. So welcome.
No, thank you for having me. And I said to you before, I love a challenge. So
okay, you're the right woman for the job. Okay, so Trace, when Revolver proposed this, what did they come to you with, and how did it work?
Well, they had had this great contest where they were throwing out first lines and you had to write a short story, 300 words. And I am someone who 300 words is about where my ideas run out. I've got a great idea and then I find myself done.
Right.
So I write flash fiction, which is something that doesn't get a lot of play out there in the literary world.
Okay.
And I'd done a couple of them and they said, we want to try something new. We're going to give you prompts. We'll give you a first line based on the life of a historical figure, but we're not going to tell you who it is.
Why do you think they didn't want you to know who the figure was?
Because I think they wanted me to take them in 1,000 different directions.
Okay. Might influence the way those stories came together.
Right. Okay. So as I got the pieces, I started to get a glimpse of who this might be. But the stories in the collection, I ended up writing 30 of them, are all wildly different. Different time periods, different genres, different characters. But there's a sense of spies and surveillance that runs through the collection, which made a lot of sense when I found out who had been my secret inspiration. They had been pulling lines based on the life of the Mata Hari.
Aha. Yeah. And real lines out of the story of her life.
So they were reading
her
biography and pulling kind of these real things that had happened to her.
What struck me about your stories is some of those first lines, there seemed like there was kind of a natural place to go from the first sentence. Some of them seemed like just the wilds of where am I going to go with this? So some must have been harder than others to do this with.
Some of them I would get it and I would have a week to write the story.
Oh, a deadline.
So exactly. Deadlines are your friend. If you're out there and you're trying to write a book, a deadline is your friend. So this was a built-in amazing thing for me to do. And I wrote a couple different versions of several of them. I would try something and have to toss it away and try again. So
Anitra, why are deadlines your friend as a writer?
Well, I mean, it's just like any other kind of goal that you want to keep up on a regular basis. It's fitness. It's, you know, it's a diet. It's a lifestyle. I mean, they talk about having a yoga practice.
That's a lifestyle. That's good.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a meditation practice, a yoga practice, you also have a writing practice. And when you have something that you want to do regularly, goals are your friend. Deadlines are your friends. And, you know, you have to stay flexible within that, obviously. I mean, if a deadline pressing down on you is actually stopping you from writing, then of course you shouldn't do it.
Right.
But in general, you know, writers benefit a lot from having clear deadlines. It keeps you accountable and it keeps you on top of, you know, like always moving forward toward that goal.
It is the first sentence for, I love to talk about first sentences, is the first sentence for a writer, and I know it doesn't always come first, but is it often, I'm starting to see the fog clear. I've got that first sentence and I know where, or is it sometimes, I love the way this sounds, now what the heck do I do with it?
You know, honestly, and I think this is true, from my background as an editor, I find a lot of times that the real beginning of the story doesn't end up coming until maybe two chapters in,
right?
At least on that first draft. So the first sentence might be the spark that, you know, allows you to start moving forward into your book. But many, many times that first sentence either gets moved somewhere else or it gets taken out because the story doesn't really pick up until a couple chapters in. And that's a common first-time writer mistake that I've seen.
You guys have heard what Irving does with this, right? Which is lore in publishing. Trace?
No, go. Tell
what?
Me.
What? I thought you knew this. John Irving writes the last sentence of every novel first.
Ah.
How
in the heck?
That?
Well, I find...
I don't think it's fake either. I think he really does it because he talks completely about that process of getting to that last sentence.
I think that's... It just goes to show that this is a different way that people's brains can work. And when I'm working as an editor, a lot of times, like, I'm making deadlines and goals for getting through a book, and I start with the end in mind. And then I see my path toward that end because I know what the end's going to be. So I'm actually not surprised that somebody works that way as a writer.
I'm kind of surprised, though, to hear you say that you have a lot of clarity about the end, because you hear so many writers say, I began, part of the challenge and the excitement and the fulfillment is that I didn't really know where I was going. Do you believe that when they say that?
I do. Again, there are so many different ways into a book, and your process for writing one book might not be the process that you have for writing another book.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it makes sense to start when I'm writing, you know, and I mainly write, you know, non-creatively. You know, I write a lot of corporate pieces and things, but I almost always start by writing the end first. And some of it is because I give myself that path. You know, I have a goal in mind, so I see the path better toward that end goal.
Right.
But then the other thing, too, is it's psychological. It's a little bit of a trick. If I write the end, I have a better feeling that I might actually finish.
Okay.
Sometimes you need that little trick.
Are you guys ready for the first challenge?
All right,
I'm ready.
First line. Okay, good. So if you've just tuned in, what are we doing here? We've got Anitra Budd with us from McAllister and Tracy Mumford from our own The Thread. And Tracy took up a challenge in which Revolver gave her a first line and then she wrote 300-word stories out of that first line. She didn't know what they were about. They were like real lines out of real biographies of the Mata Hari. We can say that. And the places she went with that was a lot of fun. And so we're talking about that idea, great first sentences, and sparks for unique and creative writing. Okay, so I want to hear from you on a great first sentence, and we'll take it from there. And maybe you'll take it from there, too. 651-227-6000. And we've got some excellent ones, you guys. 800-242-2828. Tweet me that first sentence on Twitter to Lee in Columbia Heights. Lee, bravo for taking up the challenge.
What like
is what
you
that
said
first...
about John Irving. I think that's true.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Okay. What
See,
is that is. First sentence?
All right. I turned the corner of the past, tripped, and fell into the black hole of the future.
That's good. That's got something kind of like a sci-fi fantasy kind of feel to it, or no, Lee? What do you think?
Oh, I'm not too sci-fi.
Okay.
I'm probably a little dystopian with pulling out hope at the end.
All right. So read it to us again. These guys are jotting it down.
All right. I turned the corner of the past, tripped, and fell into the black hole of the future.
I would read that, Lee.
I would read that.
Okay,
maybe
good.
I can write it one day.
Maybe you can. That's right. Let us know if you do. All right, so here's Tracy and Anitra jotting it down. Do you want a little extra time, or would you like to? What's the sentence that follows that, Trace, that comes to mind?
Middle school was the worst, is my next line. This feels like a really existential crisis that you might have as a kid. And what else is a black hole but middle school?
That's
I think
good.
I would take a juvenile
Ooh,
angle.
Really?
Oh, really? Really?
This is feeling like YA to you.
Or just a juvenile
about.
Subject. Yeah.
Okay. Anitra, how about you?
My first thought was my hand trembled as I held up the pregnancy test.
Wow. Oh, yes.
Honestly, like when I thought about, you know, how the future might look like a black hole or something unknown and scary, the very first thing
I know
finding out that you're pregnant unexpectedly.
Right, right. Turn the corner on the past. Okay, here's to Kirk in Minomen. Hey, Kirk, do you have a first line or do you have a second line from that first line?
I have a first line.
Okay, tell us. What is it?
Had she known that it was only half true, her grief over the death of her daughter might have taken an entirely different turn.
Had she known that it was only half true, her grief over the death of her daughter would have taken an entirely different turn. So, Kirk, you're channeling a mystery there, some kind of mysterious, yeah.
Possibly, or the undead, you know, the half-dead.
The undead. Ah. Ooh. Did zombies come to mind, you two?
No.
No, but now they're there.
Now they are there.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Jot on that for a minute, and I'll read a couple of other ones. I'll give you guys a little break to work on that for a minute, but we've got some other really great. Here's Sarah. With her husband's dying breath, he uttered Schadenfreude. Nicely done, Sarah. Here's Tom. My successful career as a lawyer was founded on a couple of victories in a hockey arena. I'd read that. In fact, that's got kind of legal thriller written on it for me. Here's Karen in Duluth. The cougar-scarred horse was not going to be happy when I put the saddle on his back.
Ooh. Yeah. I want to read all these books.
I know. Get writing. Sarah, Tom, Karen, come on. Let's hear it. Okay, what have you two jotted from Kirk's? Had she known that it was only half true, her grief over the death of her daughter would have taken an entirely different turn.
But some said a doll couldn't be your daughter anyway.
You always go to kind of a quirky, weird place.
I have
a
dark streak, I've been told in my fiction. Picturing a woman mourning her lost doll who may not be so lost.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I immediately went toward an idea of, like, why is this death ambiguous?
Right.
Like, there's something ambiguous about this death.
There's the mystery of
and
that.
And so the first thing I thought was the general's call had been vague and minimal. So their idea that maybe this daughter is some kind of government official, maybe
right.
she's a spy,
right.
maybe she's a soldier who's been lost in battle.
Right.
So something where we don't know exactly what's become of her.
Yeah. Like somebody who's been deployed.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Now there's going to have to be an investigation.
Or she's on a mission and has disappeared.
Right.
So I immediately thought in more of an espionage, military thriller
yeah.
direction.
Do you think, Tracy, with this Revolver project, that if Mata Hari. Again, you didn't know that it was Mata Hari, but
of
course there's a lot of dimension to the life of Mata Hari. Do you think if it had not been Mata Hari, you could have gone so many, you know, if this was not coming from a life like that, you could have gone so many different directions with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think her life is just one of the most fertile, amazing, crazy places to take as inspiration. I mean, she's a spy. She was executed. She was an exotic dancer. She has all of these things in her past. But that said, I think you can take inspiration from more mundane things as well. I mean, things you see on the train, right? Why not try
right.
writing a first sentence about the person who's sitting in front of you?
It's a good mm-hmm. idea, right?
Well, and that's because I think that's, you know, that really speaks to that sort of age-old advice that a writer is a person who sees. You know, they see deeply, they see more regularly. I mean, really exercising that skill of observation is at the root, I think, of growing as a writer.
Will you talk a little bit about what that actually means, as far as seeing in in a more penetrating and kind of vivid way as a writer, just the everyday events that are going on around you.
Right. Well, I think that the idea is that, you know, when people talk about writers, you know, wanting to aim for the universal, wanting to write that book that, you know, has something to say to so many different people, part of that is starting with learning how to see what's universal in everything around you. So, you know, your family, your work, your life in a community, the geography of where you live, you know, seeing deeply into these, you know, these things allows you to see what's universal about them,
right,
you know.
Right.
My experience as a mother, my experience as a writer and an editor, you know, how do those relate out? It's only, you know, by looking very deeply into them and trying to see what makes them universal, that is what allows you to really, like, tap into something that's going to resonate with a really wide audience.
You know what? This is reminding me of, and we played a little bit of that interview yesterday, of the, it's a memoir by Hisham Mattar, with a very unique story to tell of a father who was kidnapped by Libyan authority. I mean, this is not something that would ever
not typical.
Probably happen, right, to most of us. And yet the universe, the way he explored that universal theme of what it is to how well do we ever really know our parents, what happens when a parent is removed from a nuclear family, how do the rest of us change, what happens if you haven't seen that? I mean, all these... He was answering all these what I consider to be maybe more prosaic questions in this extraordinary situation.
Human
that
questions.
He was writing about. I know.
You know, it's human questions about loss and, you know, loss and mystery
right.
and family relationships and love and grief. You know, like the when you look down underneath the particulars and the details, which are obviously atypical and, you know, very thrilling, I'm sure. Like, when you look underneath, you see these experiences and these emotions that so many of us have experienced.
Right.
So,
and that can happen in nonfiction and fiction.
Oh, my God, yes.
I think, right?
Yeah, it's what's beyond the plot, right? And that's something that a lot of my stories are getting at, because you can't lay out an amazing, breathtaking plot in 300 words. What you can do in 300 words is get at an emotion. And so, yes, there are spies and strange sci-fi cats and things running through my collection. But when it came time to give my book a title, I called it Exceptionally Bad, because it was about exceptionally bad behavior and exceptionally bad moments in people's lives. It wasn't about espionage.
I don't remember the sci-fi cats. What story did I miss there?
That, yeah, there's a whole piece on solar cats, which are... cats powered by solar panels.
I was about to say, like, are they powered by the sun?
They are.
All right, you two. Here's another challenge from Adele on Twitter. As I looked out the window, the trees started to reach for me, whispering.
Ooh.
As I looked out the window, the trees started to reach for me, whispering. If you've just tuned in to the conversation here, we're talking about the value and the power of those memorable first lines. I always go back to Rebecca because I love that first line. You've read Rebecca, of course. What is it about? Why about that string of, I don't know, 12 or 13 words? Why is that so powerful?
Well, I think that the main thing that's happening there is that you see that it's hinting at a mystery.
Yeah.
So you're coming into sort of a conversation that clearly has a backstory that's already happened. And I think that that feeling for me of coming into a conversation that's already in progress is that's one of the things I think that appeals to me in real life and appeals to me when I'm reading something that's sort of like, OK, there's a mystery, there's a backstory, there's a history here. I don't know it, but it's happening right now. There's action, there's movement, there's emotion and thinking. And so you're like, well, where is, like, Manderley? Like, what is that? Like, why are you dreaming about that?
Yeah.
You know, it's that surprise factor. It's that mystery. It's drawing you in to want to be part of the conversation. It really is. I mean, when I start a book like that, it really is that feeling of I'm elbowing my way into a circle at a party. You know, sort of looking around and like, all right, what are we talking about? What's going on here? So
I feel like I always have this image, if I really analyze it, of taking a step at a door where there's probably black space in front of it,
oh
right?
Which
I know that sounds kind of scary.
It does.
I love that sensation. I'm kind of giving myself over, right, to
the
Do you
writer.
Jump out of planes too?
I don't. No.
Maybe this is what fulfills that urge.
Right. Yeah, that's why I don't
Instead
have
Instead of
to.
Jumping out of planes, you read great books.
So that's the conversation that we're talking about here. And new and creative ways to spark writing. I mean, this was the mission that Tracy Mumford accepted from Revolver. Here's a real line out of the biography of Mata Hari, and then take that and create some really fun fiction around that. And I want you to write a first line, and then maybe you can write the second line from a first line. You could do that too. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I sense that you have a second line too. As I looked out the window, the trees started to reach for me, whispering.
The branches were the only ones who had spoken to me in weeks.
Aha.
I get a
isolation.
Definite
solitude.
Isolation, loneliness.
Right. Yeah. Why do you think you went to loneliness there right away?
This idea of gazing out the window in what seems to be, you know, you get this vision of darkness and stormy weather, and that's kind of an isolating feeling.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of ambiance going on in just that first sentence.
I know. Because you can kind of see trees tapping on this. There's a Victorian feel to this somehow?
Very gothic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, gothic
There's
feel.
There's never happy trees tapping on windows, let's be honest. That's not something I've encountered before.
Wait a minute, there's a first line.
The trees tapped happily.
Now, I'm gonna have to disagree with you there on that, Tracy, because I immediately thought of... there's this movie, Paranorman. It's a kid's movie, and as part of it, he can, you know, see ghosts, and they talk to him, and it's not a scary movie at all. You know, he has these conversations with these ghosts. So the very first thing I thought with the trees whispering was that maybe this is just a normal, everyday, nice thing.
There you go.
You know, so
right.
My second line was, "Not now," I whispered back. "I have to get ready for school."
Good. All right. To the phones to John in Iron River with another first line. John, we're really putting these guys through their paces, aren't we? This is good.
It's fun. It's fun. I'm editing as I'm waiting on the phone here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, dear.
How about the blue lights in my rearview mirror flashed brightly as I drove along the lonely country road?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a high lonesome feel to it, John. That's what came into head.
Boy, and it's happened, so
right.
From experience.
Oh, really?
Do you pull over? Do you go somewhere where it's better, where the lighting is better?
Am I on the run? Yeah.
Does a person not know why they're being stopped, or do
exactly.
they know?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, is this, I'm finally caught? I've been on a spree for 3 years, and now they finally caught me. You could go in
You're
a lot of directions.
You're stealing all our good
ideas
here.
I'm sorry about that, you guys. I can't write and do the show at the same time, believe it or not. I love this from Katie. Okay, you guys finish that.
Okay.
I'm going to share some that are coming in from Twitter here. Katie, this is so much fun. I didn't mean to kill my father, but in the end, it was the only choice. Oh, so many places to go with that. And not all, you know, violent. I mean, there could be a lot of different dimension to that story. Okay, let's see. From Joe, I brushed off my jeans, checked that all my limbs were intact, and watched the train I just hop off roll into the future. I brushed off my jeans, checked that all of my limbs were intact, and watch the train I just hopped off roll into the future.
Ooh, train travel.
I know. Yeah. Why is train travel so romantic? And we just watched the movie 310 to Yuma, and it has revived this love of, or this new appreciation for Westerns that I have.
It combines all the best elements of a road trip story with a locked door mystery type story.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're stuck on the train. You have all these people usually coming from different places. So it's got that locked room drama. But you are going somewhere.
Right.
You're traveling.
There's
so a quest. You get the best of both worlds.
Right, yeah.
Well, and I think Patricia Highsmith, right? We just all owe her a huge credit for inspiring this creepiness
Agreed.
That we get with trains as well.
Agreed, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mentioned 310 to Yuma because the action is in, I mean, the first part of the film, and I don't think it comes from a book, the first part of the film is there's a wide kind of canvas and you're seeing a lot of Western riding. But the true heart of the action of this is how to get this criminal from a hotel room about 3 football yards to the train.
And it is the most dynamic and suspenseful part.
Mm-hmm. Of Journeys the... don't have to be long.
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of the moral of that story. Okay, what's the second line, you guys? Anitra, how about you?
Flashing
blue lights, yeah.
See. Without thinking, I pressed my foot a fraction harder on the gas pedal, flirting with escape.
Yes, yeah.
I did, despite the sheriff being my father, he never hesitated to pull me over.
Oh, Tracy, that's so good.
I like the idea of a sheriff who pulls his child over to have regular conversations.
Oh, this is not, my
There's
dad
no
is the only one who could bring me in
no,
from
it's
the
more
crime
of a
spree I
prosaic.
Was on.
More of a, you're late for dinner, and I have to track you down, flash my lights.
See, that makes me want to go back and make my line better. Like, that's fantastic.
Well, you have the time that we're going to go to the news to do that. If you would like to do that, right? So you're listening to a fun discussion here that comes from a challenge that Tracy Mumford gladly took up. She was given a first line. She wrote a bunch of stories from it. I'm going to ask her to read an excerpt of that, too. Would you do that on the
sure,
other side of news?
Of
okay, good.
I'd love
and
to.
We'll read the first line and then a little bit of the story that came out of that. And I want to hear your first lines. Challenge us. Be provocative. Think creatively. Don't make it so easy on these guys. They're good. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter. You can write that first line right there, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To Mike Moen now. And Mike, what's your first line of the newscast?
Oh, I hope it's good. Russia's president and the Syrian army say a nationwide ceasefire agreement with opposition rebels is set to begin at midnight locally. The deal was confirmed by the Turkish Foreign Ministry. Vladimir Putin says the ceasefire will be guaranteed by his country and by Turkey. A day after detaining him, German authorities have released a Tunisian man who was suspected of possible involvement in last week's Berlin truck attack. They no longer believe he was in contact with the main suspect in the rampage that killed the 12 people. A human rights lawyer says three convicted criminals were secretly executed in the first hangings in Nigeria since 2003. If confirmed, the executions would breach a 7-year moratorium on the death penalty there. All three men had been convicted of armed robbery. Hollywood is reeling over the loss of Debbie Reynolds just a day after the death of her daughter, Carrie Fisher. Comedian Rip Taylor, who worked with Reynolds for decades in her Las Vegas stage show, called her a remarkable woman who was generous to a fault. And the New York City Police Department is allowing Sikh officers to wear turbans in place of the traditional police cap and grow beards up to a half inch long for religious reasons. The police commissioner announced the new rules yesterday following a graduation ceremony for new recruits. Officers must first get approval, and the turbans must be navy blue and have the NYPD sign attached. O'Neill says there are about 160 officers who practice the Sikh religion. In the Twin Cities right now, 31 degrees with some light snow. Parts of eastern Minnesota seeing numerous snow showers this morning, but no accumulation. More news ahead on Minnesota Public Radio News. It's 10:33.
Friday on Morning Edition, we'll hear from members of Minnesota's congressional delegation about how they are preparing for the incoming Trump administration. I'm Phil Picardi. That story and the latest news tomorrow on Morning Edition here on NPR News.
Programming supported by donors of Planned Parenthood Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. Planned Parenthood is dedicated to protecting, promoting, and providing comprehensive reproductive health care and education. Planned Parenthood, here for good.
Support comes from Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis, dedicated to ending poverty for thousands experiencing homelessness in our community. You can help provide shelter and food with gifts matched through December 31st at cctwincities.org/donate.
There are so many great first lines in all those books we talked about yesterday on the biggest book show of the year, right, Trace? I mean,
that's
I can't
right.
even think. How many books did we end up recommending on the show?
More
Do you
than
remember?
30.
More than 30?
Enough to get you through the next year.
Okay, yeah. What did you read, Anitra, this year that you would have put on our, you must read this. Do not end the year without starting this book.
You
I know I'm putting you on the spot, but yeah. That's okay.
That's really hard because I've been using a lot of my time recently with reading to either read for book reviews that I'm writing or to catch up on books from previous years that I didn't get a chance to read.
Doesn't have to be brand new. Something you read last year that you would be like, I have to evangelize about this.
Oh gosh, you know, I read The Curfew by Jesse Ball. And that was published a while back, and it's all about people who are living under a totalitarian regime. And, you know, just it was something about reading it in this year and with the election being what it was. It just really resonated with me.
Is it fiction?
It's fiction.
Have you heard of it? Mm-hmm.
Jesse Ball.
You know, somehow I've missed this.
It's
this
very
sounds
dreamy.
Really good.
It's written almost like a fairy tale. It has very flattened characters. It's very mysterious. But it's all about this sort of looming menace of a society that is sort of actively working against its citizens. And a father who's basically trying to protect his daughter within this atmosphere. And it really sat with me for a long time after I put it down. And it's a pretty short book, but something about maybe framing it as almost a fairy tale. Like there's a little bit of a, not magic, but a certain sort of like distance, I think, that with the writing style. But something about it really, really affected me very strongly. I find myself still thinking about it and thinking about the choices that the father made in how he tried to make a normal life for his daughter and also try to protect her from what was going on. That Jesse Ball.
We'll put that on the list.
The Curfew.
Yeah. The way you're talking about that, I think, is the way we talked about Grief is a Thing with Feathers.
Oh,
yesterday.
That Max Porter book.
Yeah. There's an element of the surreal,
right.
Of going beyond, you know, the everyday. And it's not magic, it's not fantasy, but there are elements there.
It's what's lurking. It's what's simmering under the surface. And I think it really speaks to what you were talking about earlier, you know, with flash fiction. It's like you can't get at everything, but you can get at what's underneath. You can get at that simmering emotion.
And the other thing that we noted, and I think you're talking about this, there's an everyday ordinariness to it that you can believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of paces the novel. And then there's those flashes of the surreal and the kind of semi-magic of it. Yeah. Okay, back to the phones here. I'm going to ask you if you will read that. I'll read the first line.
Oh, right.
And then you will read just an excerpt from Exceptionally Bad. And this is this challenge that Tracy Mumford. And I want to say one thing about the illustrations. They're great.
The illustrations are fantastic.
It was Anne Lane, right?
Anne Lane did them.
Yeah.
She did the same thing. She got the first line that I got, and we did them independently. So,
so cool.
It's amazing how they match
up. I know.
Up.
I know. Okay, so this story is called Miss Snelling's School for Secretarial Excellence. Revolver gave you this line. Holding the bottle of invisible ink, I told him, this is not my color.
Desmond was rifling through my toiletries again, another floor check after a rumor spread that a girl had smuggled her cat in. There are no cats allowed at Miss Snelling's School for Secretarial Excellence, and no spies either. Both should go without saying. Snelling girls are prompt, polite, and always discreet, with flying fingers, sealed lips, and not a stray feline hair in sight.
Outstanding. So when they gave you that line, you'd probably, this falls deeper into the book. Had you were into your rhythm. I mean, you were already, or was that hard to know where to go?
I'd done them a lot. And this, you have an element of a spy there, right? Who has invisible ink? There's no way to shake what's coming from that first line.
Right.
So you just have to imagine yourself into this person who's been caught. That's what you get in the first
line. But your
line.
Story isn't predictable from that. That's what's really great about it.
Well, that was the challenge, right? You could tell every first line was leading you in one direction, and I always tried to run in a different
one. Okay, so, right. The mark of creativity there.
There you go.
It's a good challenge. If you're trying to shake up your writing routine, go the opposite direction.
Okay.
Well, and I can say as somebody, you know, who used to look at a lot of submissions when I was at Coffeehouse Press, you know, that was always what drew me into something when I found a surprise, when there was something that, you know, because you get to a point where you really expect certain plot lines based on what you see in either the query letter or the beginning. And then to be surprised, to be yanked out of your complacency. I mean, mean, especially for me, having read a lot and read a lot of submissions, for me to be yanked out of my complacency, there's something happening there that makes me want to look.
You are so jaded. Or you were.
I know,
some
right?
That is probably. To the phones to Jen in Eagan. Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for waiting. Hi. Do you have a first line for us?
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
This one's a little bit more open-ended than what you guys are talking about, but I'm curious to see where it goes. So here's my sentence.
Okay.
It was hard to tell whether this was the beginning or the end.
I love that in its simplicity. Geez. It's so good, Jen. So where would you, can I just ask you while these guys are working, where would you take that?
You know, I don't know. I just kind of came up with it. I was hoping it was more open-ended, and I was curious to see where you guys would take it. I'm a future English teacher, so I was kind of trying to channel my, English teacher knowledge there.
This would be a fun exercise for your future students, wouldn't it?
I hope so, yeah.
What grade do you think you're going to teach? Or is this college English lit that you'll be teaching?
It'll be high school.
The challenge of it all.
Right? Yep, exactly.
What makes you want to take on that challenge to teach squirming, jaded teenagers to appreciate literature?
Well, I was one of those teenagers, and, you know, high school really changed my views on writing and reading and just English in general. I'm also dyslexic, so I had to kind of overcome this, you know, disability, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I just felt like I could hopefully use that to help other students kind of find this love for reading and stuff like that.
Wow. It's a great mission and a really fun first line. Let's see. I'll go to Tracy first on this. She looks like she's got something there. Okay, so the first line is, it was hard to tell whether this was the beginning or the end.
The Ferris wheel jerked to a halt.
Why? What? Why?
I'm picturing a couple stuck on a Ferris wheel that keeps sort of jerking, and they can't decide if they're going to break up or stay together.
Ah.
And they're stuck on
this is relationship drama going on here.
I think so. There's a beginning or an end for a relationship while you're stranded on a Ferris wheel.
Do you ever analyze the path of the – do you ever kind of trace it back to
– like what my stories say about me?
Yeah.
Oh, my mom will do that for you.
And she happens to live in town. Yeah. How convenient for me. Okay, Anitra, what's your line that comes after that?
Okay. I did a slow backflip, brushing my umbilical cord aside.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought beginning, whether this is the beginning or the end, I immediately thought of life and death
that
or birth and
good.
Death. And so
you're
right
into the womb.
You're saying you're
inside the,
you're
womb
in the womb
and wondering whether it is the beginning or the end.
As a rule, I don't like books that start in the womb. But you've got me. You've got me with
that. A large section of books for you.
This is when Carrie tells me to get out. Just get out.
Never.
Broke the womb rule.
Didn't you know there was one? I don't get it with you guys. Okay, so here's Matthew on Twitter. Bang, my eyes darted open to see a hazy gray sky above me. My head throbbed and something warm began to trickle down my back. Okay, so Anitra, if you read that as a Coffee House Press editor, you would think, what adventure, thriller? Yeah, this is what you would think.
This is what I would think. I would think that we were going toward either somebody's on the run, somebody, either it's a sort of a military thriller maybe, or something about that makes me think sci-fi.
I know.
And I don't know if it's the gray sky or the something warm that is mysterious.
It sounds like it wants to be blood.
It wants to be blood, but
it doesn't have to
be. It is some other alien goop. Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Milk. It could be anything.
It could be milk.
Yeah.
It could.
That's the fun of this, right? How do you take it in a new direction?
So what kind of, did this change the way you, did it change your ideas about who you are as a writer or this project?
It makes me wish someone would write all my first lines. I'm not going to lie.
Yes. Having it from the outside, having somebody come in from the outside and give you prompts, I think. I mean, that's my favorite way to write things is
to have somebody kind of give you the.
Yeah, because it's a little bit more fun to apply yourself to something that wasn't your baby. It wasn't your idea at first. And to see where it goes, to see what you can do with somebody else's thought.
And to have something permanent on the page, like I can't delete that first line. That has to be there. And right. It's nice to know that you can't completely delete what you're working on.
So I was thinking about how many writers in the Talking Volume series have talked about the intimidation of that white page, right? Of just where to begin.
You've already got a beginning.
Right. And all the stuff they do to either put off trying to write the first line or to go back to work, or you've kind of solved that.
I've heard of writers who write, this is the first line of my novel, and then they start writing just to get away from that white page.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there really is that tyranny of like wanting that first line to be the perfect embodiment of everything you want to say in your book. And like, who can live with that kind of pressure? Who can write with that pressure?
That kind of freaks you out to the point where I think it could paralyze you.
Oh, my God, yes.
And yet first lines, they're everything, I think.
They can be.
Yeah. Well, especially, I mean, when you think about, like, I mean, again, it's like coming from publishing. It's like if you think about wanting to get your book traditionally published, there are all these ideas out there like, oh, editors only read the first 3 pages. They only read the first paragraph. They only read the first sentence, you know, which isn't always true.
What are some of the myths and the realities of the way editors work?
Well, I mean, for one, like that is one major myth that, you know, that editors don't read the submissions that they see or that they only read a very, very small fraction of them. I personally have never known any editors who have done that. I didn't do that when I was looking at submissions. I always tried to read around. And sure, maybe I didn't read the entire thing, especially if I could see pretty quickly that it wasn't going to be appropriate for the house.
Right.
But I always tried to read a good portion of it because it goes back to what I said before. Sometimes the real start of a book, sometimes the real start of what's going to be an amazing book doesn't come until a couple chapters in.
Right.
So, you know, I always had a feeling of, wouldn't I hate it if I missed out on something amazing just because I was short-sighted and the first line, you know, didn't blow me away, so I didn't keep going.
And you didn't get 2 chapters in and realize, so this is where the book starts.
Yeah.
I think you said a moment ago that, or a few minutes ago, that is a common mistake among new writers.
Exactly. And so, for me, I would always try to read a little bit further on just to see, because maybe it picks up. Maybe, you know, that beginning was just sort of getting the practice writing jitters out.
Like the throat clearing kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So, yeah.
Call here from Catherine in St. Paul. Hey, Catherine. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. And my first line was inspired by my first trip to Las Vegas last fall.
Well, lots of stories to tell there, I'm sure.
That's right. Walking into the Bellagio, the doorman's eyes stood out as the same color of soft coral I had just seen in the Las Vegas fountain light show.
So the doorman at the Bellagio has coral eyes, is that right?
That's
He's
right.
He's a zombie or something.
You could take it that way.
Okay, did you come back with a bunch of stories to tell from Vegas?
Well, I just had such a mixed reaction to it. I went out to kind of escape the election, and oh, my goodness.
It's a real – talk about surreal. It's a a place kind of made out of nothing, out of the desert. What comes to mind with that, Tracy, as you hear that? Where might you go with that? Did you think zombies?
I didn't think zombies. Ah. I thought super hungover, bloodshot eyes. And I feel like this narrator and this doorman are going to meet up later and commiserate over some drinks at the bar.
Okay.
Sounds like everyone needs a drink in that story.
Right. And Catherine probably got a few, too, while she was out there in Vegas. But what stays in? Yeah, there we go. Anitra, how about you? What's the next line?
As I walked past, his arm shot out and he gripped my elbow.
Yeah.
Something about, I feel like this, they noticed each other because something is going to happen between them.
Right.
Something surprising.
Yeah. And it might not be, he's not benign.
Right.
As you would think that most doormen are.
Right.
Right?
You never casually note the doorman, right?
Well, and I feel like it's a kind of character that has some kind of anonymity, you know, normally.
Yeah.
So the idea that he reaches out and grabs this main narrator, you know, just sort of reaches out of his anonymity and grabs her, like that's going to be the impetus for something good, something exciting.
I want to read you two. I don't think you're going to know where this comes from, but it's one of my favorite first lines. So if you guess, bravo. Here it is. People do not give it credence that a 14-year-old girl could leave home and go off in the wintertime to avenge her father's blood, But it did not seem so strange then, although I will say it did not happen every day.
Is that true, Grit?
Oh, my gosh. Anitra, you are good. You are good.
Thank you. Thank
you. How'd you know that? Have you read that, Charles Portis's?
Not for a long time, but yeah. Yes, I have, in the way back past.
It's
yeah.
so beautiful, isn't it? The way it's phrased, the rhythm of it.
It is. And I mean, well, it's like I hesitate to call it a beautiful story, but it really is. It has that sort of like almost like the desert in Las Vegas. It has that sort of tough, sand-worn beauty, you know. And that character, the girl, I mean, it's just one of the most amazing characters
I know
in literature.
Right.
So yeah. So, and especially, you know, to hear that the 14-year-old girl going off and avenging her father is like, oh, I think I know what that is.
You know what's interesting about it too is if I kind of diagram it. So Charles Portis could have ended this sentence. That a 14-year-old girl could leave home and go off in the wintertime to avenge her father's blood. But it did not seem so strange then. You know, me not being the kind of novelist he is, that's probably where I would have ended it. But that he added that phrase, although I will say it did not happen every day, just kind of transforms that line somehow.
Yeah, what you're getting there is a sense of the narrator.
Right.
Right? Like, we always think of stories as, you know, characters and plot and everything, but the narrative voice plays a huge role, and the first line is key to setting that up. Who's going to be talking to you for the next 300 pages?
And she sounds, I mean, obviously we know that she's young, or she's going to tell us about
a time
her
when
youth,
she was young,
right? But we also know that we have a sense of how she's gonna unravel this tale. I mean, we have a sense of what the rhythm of the telling is going to be like.
Oh, and so much more. You know, we know that she's looking back. We know that this is a person who recognizes that it wasn't typical. Right. But in some way, it's more related to typical than not for this person.
Right.
So that's already telling you something really interesting, that maybe they don't think it was so different and so strange. And that tells you, I mean, that tells you a lot.
A lot about the times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the kind of person this is.
That's right. Okay, so I went back on the Twitter suggestions here, you guys, and asked you to write a second line from Katie. I really love this line. I didn't mean to kill my father, but in the end, it was the only choice.
Oh, yes.
What came after that for you, Trace?
There can only be one prom king.
That's great.
The dad went back to high school, and now he's battling it with his son for prom king, and there are some deep Shakespearean motives happening here.
Uh-huh.
That's what I got.
Okay,
Tracy, go and write that story right now. Right now.
That's got something.
That sounds amazing.
It does.
Okay, here's what I said.
Okay.
I rose to my feet and shouted toward the stage, Lester, it's just not working out. We're going to have to cut the dad.
Ah, movie scene. Some kind of production.
I think there's some kind of theatrical production.
That's right.
Because I love the idea of killing off your characters.
Good. See, you two went... This is fun. You two did not go, I think, what would have been my natural impulse, which is, you know, this is going to be a story. This is going to be a dark family saga here. And I'm going to take her literally. And you didn't, which is the surprise.
Which
is really good.
You got to go beyond the literal sometimes.
I know. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Initially, my first thought was going to be something about a bedside, you know, having to take a father off life support. And yeah, it was then I was like, oh, that can't be it. That can't be it. It's got to be something. I think something a little jazzier.
Okay, to the phones to Mike in Minneapolis. Hey, Mike. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Are you going to give us a first line?
Yep.
Okay, what is it?
As my lady friend and I were breaking off our relationship, she said something about me that changed my life forever.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
No pressure there, Mike.
I know. Just the most important thing that will ever has ever been said about you. Nicely done, Mike. I think they're scribbling away. We'll see if it does justice to your first line. Mike, are you a big fiction reader? Do you read a lot of fiction?
Oh, yes.
That's a little unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because let me just say this, that most fiction buyers are women. A lot of men do not read fiction. I wonder why that is. Trace, what have you got from that line? It's good.
This isn't what I made you for.
This isn't what I made you for.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
That's so good.
There's kind of a robot futuristic.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a little something.
Feel to that. Yeah. Do you read a lot of short story fiction? I don't know if we've ever talked about
this. I do. I love short stories. I think of them as like the Halloween candy of literature. Like, you just want to gobble them up. They're bite-sized. They're amazing. So,
I feel guilty when I'm reading a short story. I feel
what?
Like, yeah. I feel like I should be face down, neck deep in a really... I know. I don't know why.
Yeah, you can't see my surprised face,
like,
everyone.
I know.
Like, oh my gosh.
I don't know what this is or where this comes from.
No,
but
literature does not have to be 500 pages and between
it's
thick cardboard.
Thing in my head. I know.
Well, I think that's the idea of like the medicinal... It's medicinal. It's something you need to do. It's something you have to do. It's something that's good for you. I think that feeling comes out a lot of, you know,
get that out of my
education
head.
And reading, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It shouldn't be that way. Reading is for fun. Short stories are amazing.
Is George Saunders new? Is it a story collection? Or because somebody mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah. George Saunders, after 20, 30 years of dominating the world of short stories, now is coming out with a novel.
Oh, he's coming out with a novel.
Which is the opposite path.
Yeah.
For most people.
Yeah.
No.
So.
Yeah. Wonder what that's about.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
It is amazing. I read it already.
You've already read it?
Oh my gosh. The minute it showed up, I was like, I got to leave right now. I got to read this book. It's a great, strange meditation on the night that Abraham Lincoln's son died.
Really?
And what happens in the graveyard.
Ooh.
So when you say meditation, I mean, there's a lot of historical.
He's mixing in real historical documents, but there are ghosts. And it's what happens one night in the graveyard when Abraham Lincoln comes to visit his son in where he lies.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually something I think that really speaks to something else I was thinking about. When I was thinking about this idea of like how you write your first book and how you get it out. Like mixing in elements from other kinds of forms. Like if you're writing fiction, mixing in nonfiction elements. If you're writing, I don't know, if you're writing a short story, maybe you start with a poem.
Colson Whitehead did that with Underground Railroad.
There
right?
are so many avenues into ideas. You know, you don't have to just take one way. And I think that's something that can really help you get jump started.
Don't you feel like, though, Anitra, that's the mark of a confident, more. More experienced writer. I think that takes a lot of confidence to be able to pull that off well. No?
Well, I think once you're in it and once you have like a big piece in front of you and seeing like how the pieces fit together and that's something where
it's
you
complex.
Know experience helps
right.
obviously. But I'm thinking more about just getting started. You know, sometimes I think sitting down with the goal of writing a book-length work can be it's intimidating scary.
Yeah.
And when you set yourself up for that, sometimes that can be an impediment to actually getting the work done.
Right.
But if you say something like, "You know what? I'm just going to start a poem. I'm just going to write a little bit of a song and see where it goes." The ideas might then be triggered from this, you know, from this other kind of work.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I always think in getting past writing blocks, it's the same way. Like if you're finding yourself stuck at some point in your book, go off and do something else. You know, try to like paint something, sketch something, sing a song, look at other forms as a way to generate
sing a song.
I mean, you know, creativity, it's unpredictable. And sometimes you need a jolt from an area outside your comfort zone to make it work.
Really good to have you here. This has been so much fun. I hope you'll come back. Trace, you're a sport.
Yeah, we'll put all these prompts online.
We will.
So anyone wanting to write, you can find them there on the thread.
I'm going to give you one last one from Twitter here, and you can tweet me the second line. So here it is. "While my great uncle's casket was being lowered into the ground, my grandpa muttered, 'It's drafty in here. Who opened the windows?'"
Oh, jeez. "My face as I move around all over the place, but now I'm down.